I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Baltimore is making a bid to host the 2026 World Cup soccer tournament. If successful, Baltimore will share the global spotlight as one of 16 cities in North America chosen to host matches. And perhaps more importantly, a chance to host the World Cup comes with the opportunity to bring new energy to our city and accelerate infrastructure improvements. We'll talk about Baltimore's bid today with Maryland Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford and Terry Hasseltine, the Vice President of the Maryland Stadium Authority. Plus, as Baltimore and cities in more than a dozen states observe Indigenous Peoples Day, I'll talk with Native American activist Daisy Francoeur about the challenges facing Native communities across the nation and around the world. Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you are along for the ride today. In 2026, the United States, Canada, and Mexico will share the stage of the largest World Cup soccer tournament in history. It's expected that 16 different venues will host matches between an expanded roster of teams from around the globe. 11 of those venues will be in the United States, and maybe one of them will be right here in Baltimore. Maryland is making a bid to be one of the hosts of this great global party. So today, let's talk about what putting our best foot forward looks like. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford joins us. Along with Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, he co-chairs the committee that is working to bring the World Cup to Baltimore. He joins us on Zoom from Columbia. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Glad you're with us. And Terry Hasseltine is here as well. He's the Executive Director of the Maryland Sports and the Vice President of the Maryland Stadium Authority. He's on Zoom from Camden Yards. Terry, welcome to you.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Lieutenant Governor, let me ask you to give us what some folks call the elevator pitch, you know, between the first floor and the 20th floor. If you had to explain to somebody why Baltimore should be one of the sites for the World Cup, what would you tell her?
I'd say that we have great infrastructure to support the thousands of fans that would come in to the country and into the city. We have a world-class stadium that holds 71,000 cheering fans, easy access to it from either rail, highway, very easy access from the airport, BWI, Thurgood Marshall BWI Airport, as well as not far from two additional, being Reagan National in Dulles. And the hotels that are located near the stadium, across the street, down the street from the stadium, is very walkable to go from the hotels to the stadium. And I think that puts Baltimore far ahead of many of the other cities that are competing for the games.
And Terry Hasseltine, give us a sense of who those other cities are. What's our, in your view, our biggest competition?
Well, I there are obviously 16 other U.S. cities, you know, going down the eastern seaboard. You have Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Orlando, Miami. Going into the Midwest, you have Cincinnati, Nashville, Houston, Dallas, Kansas City, Denver, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle. If I were to put our prediction on who our biggest competition is, probably Orlando, Nashville, and Kansas City. We all kind of sit within the same capacity levels, as well as sitting in the same line of where they're predicting that matches might be played in 2026 in the pool play round.
So, Terry, the total number of applications or pitches that are being made to the FIFA selection committee is what? And then they're going to choose 11, right? So we need to be one of the 11 out of, is it about 17 or 18, something like that?
We need to be in the top 10 out of 17 U.S. cities, because three matches are guaranteed to Mexico. And there's a challenge right now because there's only two venues eligible in Canada because Montreal dropped out. So they believe that the 11th venue will be in the United States because of the infrastructure and the stadium capacities that we have in the U.S.
And Lieutenant Governor, how do you see the impact to the state of Maryland and to the city of Baltimore if we are chosen as one of the venues?
Well, I think on the, you know, just on the public relations side, it lets the city show itself in a very positive way, showing how gracious we can be as host of a world-class, the largest sporting event in the world, as well as the economic impact on the state and the city will be over $300 million is what we're anticipating, as well as full-time jobs, expansion and upgrades in the areas around the stadium in terms of transit and the like, as well as investment in the stadium, which we're continuing to do. And of course, that's going to have an impact in the hotels, the restaurants, and all of the venues in the area. We also have, as Terry can explain a lot better than myself, you know, we'll be utilizing local universities for training facilities, practice facilities up at Morgan and Loyola, over at UMBC, as well as Towson. So there's going to be a significant impact on the city, on the state to have those games here.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking about Baltimore's bid to get the 2026 FIFA World Cup to come to our fair city. Love to hear from you, listeners, about your feelings on the World Cup. Are you a soccer fan? Do you play? Do your kids play? Is soccer something that you follow closely? How excited would you be if the World Cup were to come to Baltimore? 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. So, Terry Hasseltine, what kinds of investments or what kinds of improvements need to be made to the stadium itself? Lieutenant Governor mentioned transit. I understand there's an upgrade to Camden Station being considered, and even Rash Field. Tell us what kinds of upgrades would be required.
So for clarification, the Camden Station has already been done. That investment has already been made by the state. It reopened just, you know, during COVID about 7 months ago. So it's fully operational, new logistics there. As it pertains to the infrastructure around the stadium, we'd have to do a couple small modifications in the bowl in order to accommodate the full pitch demand on the World Cup would bring, along with their security buffer. But in the grand scheme of things, it's relatively minor. And it also fits within the master plan of some things that the Maryland Stadium Authority, as well as the Ravens, have been talking about as the next phase of some upgrades that we want to do to the building. And then when we're talking about training sites, we have six training sites that we have presented. Those facilities are Loyola, Morgan, Towson, Goucher, UMBC, and Reedburg Park. You know, one of our goals as part of our legacy plan is to you know, help those facilities enhance some of the infrastructure around them based on their master plans. So we're working in concert with the universities to make sure that the things that we are proposing fall within the schematic of things that they want to do. You know, obviously Reedburg Park is under construction right now by Whiting Turner. That facility, some of the enhancements would be additional fields being placed there. It'd be a legacy leave behind for the residents of the city of Baltimore and that community. And a couple of major initiatives that we're working on as part of this process is Let's Play with the Maryland State Youth Soccer Association. It's about bringing the game and life skills through the beautiful game of football, you know, to underserved communities and schools around the Baltimore area, as well as the surrounding counties. We also launched the International Football Development Initiative, which is using the broad skills of the beautiful game to expand our portfolio, both from a commerce trade, plus also an exchange of, tourism assets across the pond over in Africa, as well as Europe and South America. And then the last but not least, we are the first city and the first state of peace in our partnership with Football for Peace, which is a UN-based initiative that will use the game as a diplomacy mechanism to ensure that we're helping the next generations with the skill sets to be more diplomatic in the approach and how we resolve conflict resolution. And again, using the beautiful game as that platform.
Terry Hasseltine is with the Maryland Stadium Authority. Maryland Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford is the co-chair of the committee trying to get the FIFA 2026 World Cup soccer tournament, known as football around the world, everywhere except the United States, and the beautiful game. It's midday. We're talking about Baltimore's bid to get the 2026 World Cup. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us, of course, @MiddayWYPR. So, Lieutenant Governor, the committee from FIFA that is making a decision about where to hold the matches in 2026 in Canada, Mexico, and the United States. They were here. They attended a Ravens game. Thank God it was the game in which a very exciting finish had us victorious over the Kansas City Chiefs. This took place a few weeks ago. What's your take on their impression? What's your hunch? You saw these folks. You hung out with them. You talked to them. You were with them as they were, experiencing that game. If we had to pick a game that we would have them experience, that's the one we'd pick.
Right.
What's your take? What do you think our chances are?
I think they were very impressed. Now, of course, I'm a homer, and I'm very optimistic. But I thought they were very impressed. The timing just worked out perfectly. Of the cities that they saw on that trip, we were the only one where we had a live action, live game take place at the stadium versus them going into an empty stadium, which they did later. But to see 71,000 cheering fans, to walk, to do the Raven walk, to the stadium, they could see the excitement of fans. They could kind of envision what it would be like to have a World Cup match there. And then the second day, we did a full presentation down at the World Trade Center at the in the Inner Harbor, overlooking the whole city, so that they could get a feel for the geography. They heard from the Downtown Partnership. They heard from tourism offices. Yeah, they heard from Terry, myself. We all made the pitch to them in terms of what it would be like to have the match here. We answered a lot of their questions, in terms of walkability, how far is the train station away, for the Amtrak service, as well as, where is the, the MARC service, the trains that would come in from D.C. or from the airport. I think they were impressed. And then we went to lunch on a beautiful day. It was a beautiful early fall, late summer day, the rooftop lunch in Federal Hill. A number of the dignitaries had crab cake, and they were excited about that. And it just, I thought it went very well. It was extremely good.
That's good to hear. And Terry Hasseltine, when you look at the other cities in past years, I guess the last time World Cup was here, was it in the 90s? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. 94.
When they, in 94, the cities that had winning bids, what do you glean from their experience? What did you learn studying what they did to be successful in their bids?
Well, we looked at the case studies of the past host to see, all the things that they did well, but then also, because it was so long ago, looking at the things that FIFA might have wished that were in market. So what we did from all of that effort is we have proposed one of the most consolidated footprints probably in World Cup history. When you look at the training sites, to the stadium, to our hospitality infrastructure, to our transportation infrastructure and the airports, it's all within less than 30 minutes. Other cities are going to be very challenged in order to provide the entire portfolio of everything that FIFA needs within a 30-minute radius of the stadium. When you do that, you're talking about 10,000-plus hotel rooms downtown. You're talking about an additional 10,000 hotel rooms at the airport, which are two light rail stops, right? Drop off at our stadium, take the third one, and you're right downtown. So because of having that 20,000 rooms within short proximity, and then putting five out of our six training sites within that portfolio. And then you talk about the hospitality infrastructure with our restaurants at Bed Hill, Harbor East, downtown, West Baltimore. You talk about all those locations. The fan experience when it comes to Baltimore, Maryland will be second to none. And that's one of the things I think myself and our committee believe is distinguishing part between us and what others are offering.
Terry Hasseltine is the president of Maryland Sports. Maryland Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford is the co-chair, along with Mayor Brandon Scott of Baltimore, on the committee that is trying to get the 2026 FIFA World Cup. We got a couple of callers on the line. We will get to them after we take a quick break. We're also going to hear a little bit from Baltimore's own Mike Rowe, when he was the guy tapped to narrate a film about Baltimore for the FIFA committee. You are welcome to join our conversation when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle's @MiddayWYPR. To follow me, it's @TomHallWYPR. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR News station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our broadcast, the disappearance of a young white woman named Gabby Petito has sparked enormous media attention. The search for her boyfriend, Brian Laundry, is chronicled in breathless tones, hour by hour, in some corners. Tomorrow on Midday, we're going to talk about the phenomenon that the iconic journalist Gwen Ifill identified as missing white woman syndrome. Two scholars on the subject and the co-founder of a foundation called Black and Missing will join me for a conversation about what the media does and doesn't do in these cases and how that affects the racial climate in our country. If you've just joined us today, we're talking soccer. We're talking football for you purists, or the beautiful game. Baltimore has made a bid to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup, and we're talking about it with Maryland Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford and Terry Hasseltine, who are on the committee that is making the Baltimore bid. Here's a bit of the audio from a video put together by the committee to help entice the folks at FIFA to pick Baltimore. It's narrated by Baltimore's own Mike Rowe.
So what would you think if I told you that the 2026 World Cup is coming to Baltimore? Well, you'd probably say it's a long shot, right? But it's not like we haven't been here before. Baltimore knows what it's like to be the underdog. We were the underdog in the 58 NFL championship game against the Giants in New York. Remember the famous sudden death game that made the NFL the NFL? We were the underdogs in 1966 when the Orioles faced off against the Los Angeles Dodgers with Sandy Koufax. Well, the O's swept that World Series in four games. And just 2 years ago, 16th-seeded UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, went up against number one UVA during the 2018 NCAA's March Madness and beat them. Fact is, Baltimore has always been the underdog, and we have always risen to the challenge. So, here we are again, taking our shot at 2026, a chance to host match play on the world stage.
That's Mike Rowe making the pitch to have Baltimore be one of the pitches for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. What do you folks think? Listeners, let us know. Do you think that bringing the World Cup to Baltimore would be a good thing for our city and a good thing for FIFA? 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones to Katie, who's on the line in Fells Point. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Hi, there is no doubt in my mind that this is a good thing for Baltimore, but my question is for the lieutenant governor and the committee is, how could this be actually the thing that that propels the state government to become a true partner in the city of Baltimore? Because first of all, Baltimore is our cultural hub. You do not go to Annapolis to see world-class museums. You do not go to Annapolis or Havre de Grace or St. Michael's or Oxford to to see, or Ocean City, to see football games, baseball games. You do not go to anywhere to get medical treatment, which is two of the greatest medical institutions in the world are here in Baltimore. But the state just continues to shortchange and to me, and I've lived in downtown Baltimore for 40 years and I grew up in Annapolis. And I just feel like people are like, ooh, why would you go downtown? You know, I'm constantly defending it. But right now, Baltimore is in a lot of pain. I don't know why they can't get the trash under control here.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Katie, I'm sorry to leave you, but we've got a bunch of callers, and I want to make sure we get to as many as we can. But, Lieutenant Governor, what's your response to Katie, who indicates that, you know, has an impression that the state is, you know,
I think she has the wrong impression. The state invests a tremendous amount in Baltimore City. We are working, you know, hand in glove with the police department on crime issues. We fund multiple police officers there. There are four state universities that are in the city. The state runs the community college. The state runs the jail. The state runs the zoo. Funding, if you go on North Avenue and see what's going on with some of the development that's taken place there, you take a look at the investment the state has made into the East Baltimore Development Initiative with Hopkins, go up to Northwood by Morgan State, talk to our housing and community development, what we're doing with opportunity zones. The state is investing in Baltimore to a level probably not seen in years. So I'm not sure which, and then when she talks about trash, that's a local issue. And I've talked about that as well, but that is a local issue and something that can be controlled by the local executive and executive offices.
Sure. And so, Lieutenant Governor, I mean, I think you're exactly right. You make very fair points about that investment. But on the other hand, there is the impression, certainly, you know, that sometimes the mayor and the governor seem to be at loggerheads on things about criminal justice and other issues. I mean, there seems to be some enmity going on, at least between those two guys. I wonder, is this particular project, the project to get FIFA to place the World Cup in Baltimore in 2026, a good opportunity for you to work with the mayor and for the city and the state to work together towards in common purpose
in a way
that could help maybe heal some of the wounds? What do you think?
I think it is. I mean, there's no wounds that I have with regard to the mayor. So he probably is critical of some things that I could do better. I have been critical on the trash issue. I think it is an opportunity, but I think, like you said, there's perceptions, but some of that is based on blame games that go on with regard to what the state does and what the state doesn't do. And I would ask people to take a closer look at the facts. And we work well with the mayor and the city council president.
And Terry Hasseltine, before we go to another couple of callers, the proximity of Baltimore to Washington, D.C., is that a good thing or a bad thing? Does that help the cause? Does it hurt the cause? What's your take on that dimension of this?
That's a fair question. And part of it, I think it's a net positive. Being close to the nation's capital helps us. I mean, the fact that we have a world-class stadium in M&T Bank Stadium, one that just went through and had, you know, about $144 million of new, you know, renovations done. It always ranks in the top tier of NFL stadiums as it pertains to public safety, as well as amenities and fan experience. I think being that close to the district is helpful because it brings in some additional assets that are close by, more hotel rooms, you know, another forms of transit, the fact that we connect right at Camden Yards, you know, due north on the MARC train. I think it brings in an excitement to the capital region. And I think we benefit each other by being a part of this together.
And of course, as the video indicates, we are considered an underdog in this competition, but we're still in it, and it looks like we made a pretty strong presentation when the gang was here to check out our city a couple of weeks ago. Let's go to Phoenix, Maryland. Francesca's on the line. Welcome to Midday with Lieutenant Governor Rutherford and Terry Hasseltine.
Hi there. Thanks. So I'm kind of a newer soccer mom. I've got a third grader and a first grader, two girls, spent the whole weekend out at soccer matches in various fields. And I just love the community of people and watching the kids develop a love for the sport and confidence and all the good things that come out of it. And just the thought that we could kind of expose, you know, all the kids in the area to this kind of opportunity would be amazing. So thrilled for that and thrilled for the city. I think to everybody's point, we're always kind of seen as an underdog or you've got to kind of defend Baltimore, but to be able to showcase what a great city it really is would be awesome.
Yeah, well, thanks for that call, Francesca. I appreciate it. Let's go to James. He's on the line in Charles Village. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for taking my call. And I thought that similar to the Olympics where they do the flame through different communities, why not do a ball kick through each community of Baltimore and it ends up at the stadium to get everyone in all the communities and neighborhoods excited about this event coming to our community? Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's a great idea.
Can I add to that? I think that's one of the really exciting parts about, you know, pursuing an event of this nature. No other event on the globe can touch every community of a city like the World Cup. And one of our long-term plans and our legacies of this opportunity is to make sure that every corner of Baltimore is touched by an experience associated with bringing this beautiful game to the city and to the state. So those are the type of initiatives, and thank you, caller, for that opportunity, because those are the type of things that we want to put together to make sure that every component and every nationality and every demographic get a chance to really be a part of this event, because that's what it's all about, is bringing our community together to showcase why Baltimore is such a great place.
Well, thank you for that suggestion, James. I think it's a great idea personally, and I'm sure the committee will take it under consideration. And Lieutenant Governor, there are ancillary issues when you're hosting an event of this magnitude. They have to do, I've heard people mention human trafficking tends to increase during these kinds of big events. There are security issues. What are some of those issues that you know that you'll have to contend with if, in fact, we are chosen as a site? Is there a particular dimension of Baltimore that makes us well-equipped to handle those non-athletic dimensions of this event?
Yeah, you raise a good point, and that is something that unfortunately occurs in, or at least is an issue in most large events. We face that in this country when we have in Super Bowl cities, and even in some of the other large sporting events that occur. We are well aware of that issue. We have legislation that was passed a couple of years ago that, you know, increased the felony charges associated with human trafficking, crimes, trafficking, labor trafficking as well. We've funded and will continue to fund victim services for those who, you know, are subject to trafficking, have been penalized by it, and expanding our regional navigator program. We've been doing that over the last several years, which helps victims of child sex trafficking. So I think we're prepared and we'll continue to prepare, of course, with our federal partners to monitor the situation and to make sure that we are, you know, protecting our folks, protecting the people that may be brought in for that particular purpose, and trying to get the help for them, the victims of trafficking and human trafficking and sex trafficking, get help for them and get them out of those situations. And I believe we have the social structures in place to help with that.
All right, well, that's all the time we have to devote to this very interesting issue. The FIFA committee has said that they'll be making some more site visits this month and next, and we'll come up with a decision sometime at the end of the year or the very beginning of 2022. So you know we will stay on top of it. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, thank you so much for your time, sir. I appreciate it and look forward to the next time.
Thank you.
Terry Hasseltine is the president of Maryland Sports. Terry, good luck and Godspeed on this effort. We've got our fingers crossed and we hope it works out.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll do it together as one.
Coming up after a quick break, celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day with a Native American activist, Daisy Francoeur. But before we take that break, each week here on our show, it's our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 264 people have been victims of homicide in Baltimore City. Baltimore police have released the identities of 8 people whose deaths were first reported in the weeks before last. They are Christopher Weaver, age 32, Troy Steve, age 29, Tyreek Bowden, age 23, Johnny Brown Jr., age 24, Farron Meredith, age 45, Davon Lee, age 42, Corey Harris, age 37, and Reginald White Jr. He was 35 years old. 4 people were victims of homicide last week. They are Albert Clark Jr., age 40, Maisha Cuffey, age 38, Brianna Glasgow, age 26, and Del Monte Keels. He was 16 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.